Here we go. Okay, so the firm on its way. I went to Sharon to do our firm today. This idea, it's a little bit a deeper idea that I guess we usually talk about in the class, but Purim on the road, we want to get a deep understanding of Purim. So I want to share an idea. We'll try to take it step by step to make sure it's clear, but it's a little bit of a deeper concept. But it's a major concept of Purim, which is important for us to understand and to apply as we celebrate Purim. And after the Megillah, we say a very famous piyut, Shoshanas Yaakov. We'll sing it on Purim, we say it after the Megillah reading on Purim. And the first line of Shoshanas Yaakov, as we say it, the Shoshanas Yaakov itself is Samecha. The rose of Yaakov was, you know, very, very happy, referring to Klal Yisrael. The Jews were very happy upon seeing Birosam Yaakov when they saw together Tchelus Mordechai. The Tchelus, you know, the blue clothing of Mordechai. Now Mordechai came out at the end of the Megillah wearing, you know, royal garments, including a blue robe, it seems, some sort of blue clothing, and they got very excited to see his blue clothing. So this, you know, a piyut, you know, the piyut means it's a, you know, a poetry we have in our liturgy. So they have different sources. Many are very old, very respected sources. Shoshanas Yaakov is a piyut that seems to come from the times of Anshei Knesset Gedola, meaning it goes back to the time of the second Beis Mikdash, really following Purim time, like really as a, really right after Purim occurred, this piyut was written. That's what some sources say. So this is a very old piyut, something that we can look at the language and learn a lot from about the story. So there's a lot to be said about every single stanza. I mean, why are the Jews called Shoshanas Yaakov? Why are they referred to as a rose in the piyut? Birosam Yachad, it says they saw it together, referring to some form of brotherhood, unity, achdus, which occurred. And they rejoiced over seeing Mordechai's techeles, over his blue-dyed garments. So what I want to focus on is, what's the stress we're putting on the blue? I mean, if you look at the Megillah, Mordechai wore all sorts of stuff. It says then in the Megillah, it's a pasuk we all say together, Mordechai yetzal fnei ha-melech, Mordechai came out from before the king, wearing royal garments, techeles, which is blue, mechur, which I think is some sort of white garment, atera zav, he had a golden crown on, he had on these linen clothes in purple, and all sorts of stuff he was wearing. He was wearing royal garments of all colors and all materials and shapes and sizes. Right, he's dressed up as a king. In this piyut, the focus is on the Jews got excited to see him in his techeles. You know, it wasn't his crown, it wasn't his purple garments, it wasn't his linen garments, it wasn't his white garments, it was his techeles. So I want to understand a little bit about what this focus is, why the techeles was what made the Jews so excited. So that's our question we want to address. The concept of techeles we find, namely, spoken about in the Torah in regards to tzitzis. We know that originally the way it should be, tzitzis have white strings and blue strings. Nowadays we've lost the recipe basically to make that blue dye. Some feel they found how to do it, some argue with it. Still majority of Jews are not wearing the blue strings at this point, and those blue strings are lost due to our lengthy stay in Golus, you know, in exile from Eretz Yisrael. But the ideal mitzvah of tzitzis involves white strings with blue strings. So we want to understand, you know, that it's just, and it's called techeles. So when you see the word techeles, it's referring to something. It seems to be a reference to that mitzvah in tzitzis as techeles, because that's really the place you find in terms of the Torah, in terms of a mitzvah, the importance of the blue. So I want to understand more what the blue is about tzitzis, and then try to apply it back as well. Furthermore, there is a famous argument that Korach made against Moshe. You know, in Parshas Korach, Korach rises up as a rebel to rebel against Moshe Rabbeinu. And in the Torah, it gives us a few different, you know, approaches as to what Korach's complaint actually was, and what was his basis of his rebellion. And the Chazal and the Midrashim, they tell us more. So one of the Midrashim says, what did Korach say to Moshe? Korach said to Moshe, I don't understand. You want me to wear a blue string with my white strings on my tzitzis. But he says, let's say my shirt's totally blue. Then I shouldn't have to wear tzitzis at all. And that's not true. The halacha is, even if your shirt is totally blue, you still have to wear tzitzis. But Korach was saying, he built up this complaint, you know, in a few steps. I mean, he said, number one, all of us are holy. Why we need you? Right? Why we have to have a leader like you, Moshe? We're all holy. We all heard God speak at Har Sinai. And he said, if your house is full of Sfarim, why do you need a mezuzah? And if your shirt's totally techeles, why do you need tzitzis? And these are all kind of Korach building up his complaints. But Korach focused on the fact that if your shirt's totally blue, then you shouldn't need tzitzis on it, because you've achieved the purpose. So the purpose is to get to see the blue, You have plenty of blue over here. So then what's the purpose of the tzitzis? That was what Korach was. And Korach obviously was wrong, and the halacha is not like Korach. The halacha is that even if your shirt is blue, you still need tzitzis. But the question is, you know, what is Korach saying? Why is he wrong? You know, what's the response to Korach? It's still about the blue. To add in, so on some level, Korach makes sense. So what's our response to that? I'll add in one more thing, which is that when the Jews traveled in the desert, so the Torah describes the way that they covered up all the vessels of the Mishkan. I mean, they had the menorah, and they had the aron, they had the shulchan, the table, and they had the mizbeach. They had all these things they had to travel with, all the different kelim. So the Torah actually gives us exactly how they were all covered. And the... hold on, I'll just read deeper so I can grab this. So the Chumash tells us that each thing had prescribed basically different coverings, different cloths used to cover them. So they didn't walk around with them in the midbar exposed. They walked around when they were traveling, they covered them with special materials. And each one gets its own special material. So just to read to you, so it's clear. So end of Parshas Bamidbar. So now the for instance, so when they traveled with the Aron, they took down the Paruchas, which was, you know, the curtain that divided between the outer room and the inner room of the Mishkan, and they covered the Aron with it. On top of that, they put a covering made out of leather of a tachash, which is an animal the Torah says only existed at that time, a unique animal. And then on top of that, they put a blue covering of techeles. So we see that the arm is covered on the outside with techeles. These other types, the other vessels were covered. Let's say, for instance, the shulchan had on the outside, it had red, it had blue first, and then red, and then tachash leather. So its covering on the outside was tachash, was leather. The menorah had blue. Then it had tachash, and the tachash on the outside. So you see, each one had its own prescribed coverings. But the only one, to my knowledge, that had the covering on the outside was blue, was the aron. Everything else had blue on the inside. The aron had blue on the outside. So again, anytime you see this connection between the blue and all these different contexts, you have to know what is this telling us. And
what chapter is that in?
This is chapter 4. And it's really the whole chapter 4 talks about these coverings, the first half of it, in Bamidbar. Bamidbar. So we have four different examples of where techeles is used. We have techeles, Mordechai's garments are techeles, that we're focusing on that part of his garments. We have the techeles and tzitzis. We have Korach's complaint about, if you have a shirt that's all techeles, then why do you need tzitzis on it? You have techeles covering up the aron. So what's the big deal about the techeles? What does it represent? So that's what I want to try to maybe discuss a little bit. Then we'll understand more about Purim that way, because the techeles is what made the Jews all excited at the end of the Purim story. So what's the meaning of techeles? So the place we go to figure that out is in tzitzis. Because tzitzis is the place where we really find a mitzvah that actually connects with the dye we call techeles. So it says this is the end of Parshas Shlach, where tzitzis is discussed. So it says there that you should make tzitzis, and on the edge you should put also a string of techeles, a blue dyed string. So the Chazal teach us, the sages teach us, that what does the blue represent? So they tell us, well, the blue, it reminds you of the ocean, which reminds you of the sky, which reminds you of Hashem's Kisei Kavod, the heavenly throne of Hashem. So Techeles is sort of a link for us to connect up and remember Hashem's heavenly throne, Kisei Kavod, which is really, that's how we view the seat of Hashem's running of this world, Hashem's Hashkacha. That's the Kisei Kavod. So Techeles is something which is supposed to remind us of Hashem in a very indirect way. It's a few steps. You know, there's this, oh, this looks like the ocean, oh, the sky, oh, Hashem. Right? But that's how we're supposed to do it. And it's a very subtle hint. And beyond that, you don't make your tzitzis al techeles. There's the white strings and the blue strings. So essentially what you're doing is you're looking at the strings, you're picking out the blue, You're going to say, oh, there's blue over there. Oh, the ocean. The sky. Hashem. That's the train of thought. So it's a very indirect or subtle hint to remember Hashem. And it's a funny thing because, you know, if we want to remember Hashem, maybe Korach's right. Let's make it all blue. I mean, isn't it better just to remember Hashem straight? Why do you have to make search in the white and find the blue and connect all the dots? Why is it that way? So the answer to this, to Korach, is really the following. The reality of life is that when we spot Hashem in the world, He's not that open. You don't look around and see Hashem everywhere. You know, you kind of discern in between the lines. Oh, I see Hashem's hand at play over here. You know, you look at events, you say, I see Hashem is guiding the events. You look at a long term of, you know, the way the occurrences happen in life. You say, oh, I see Hashem was sort of connecting the dots and guiding me to a certain place. We don't look around and see Hashem everywhere. We look around, so really that same image. You have a lot of white. The strings of white don't tell you anything. And if you look in between the lines, you connect the dots, you know, you think through it a little bit, you discern some blue. And then that blue sort of reminds you, oh, it must be Hashem who's at play over here. So the model of tzitzis is the model of how life is. It's the model of this world. This world, Hashem doesn't pop out and wave at you and says, here, hi, here I am. Hashem says, I'm kind of hiding behind the scenes. It's up to you to figure out, to find me, and to see that really, you know, in between all the different white strings, there is a little blue here which connects you to Hashem. That's the reality of life. Now, we don't see the Kisei HaKavod. We don't see Hashem's throne of glory. We see things that kind of reference us up in our minds to understand that Hashem runs the world. It's these very slight hints which teach us about Hashkacha, about Hashem's providence in this world. You have to discern them. So you see, you know, you see a little bit. You know, we have a story. Hashkacha Prat happened to me. You know, I can tell you everything added up, and the miracle occurred. Periodically in history, we've seen open miracles, but that's not every day. That's, you know, very periodic. There's a lot of white, and then every once in a while, you see an open miracle happen. It's a glimpse of God, but it's only when you look for it. And some people might see a miracle and not even notice it because they're not looking in between the white. They're just noticing the white. They don't see the blue. So miracles might occur to us, and they don't even notice Hashem. You know, so within the way the world runs, Hashem is there. You could find Him, but you got to search, and you have to connect the dots, and you have to think, and you say, oh, there's blue there, and the ocean, and the sky. Oh, Hashem, I see how it all comes together. That's the message of tzitzis. It's very interesting that the earliest time one's allowed to say, we've mitzvah every morning to say Shema in the morning. The earliest time, the way it's described in halacha of saying Shema, is called Mishayakir. If you ever look at the charts of Zmanim, you know, so one of the Zmanim is called Mishayakir. Mishayakir means Mishayakir ben techeles lekarsi. It means the time you can distinguish. It's light enough outside that you can distinguish between blue and green, and it uses the word techeles and karsi. One opinion says techeles alavan, blue and white. One says blue and green. But it's a time where you can distinguish between techeles and another color. So if it's too dark outside and you can't discern the colors, you can't say Shema yet. Once it gets light enough outside that you can look at blue and green and you can tell the difference, now you can say Shema. That's that. So we now have charts to tell you what time that is. But if you don't have a chart, you can walk outside and the light, and, you know. And the problem is now with street lights, you can't really figure out what the time is. But if it was totally dark outside and then finally there's enough light in the air that you can see blue and green, you can say Shema. So in a more symbolic level, now why is the time to say Shema the time where you could distinguish between the blue and the other color? So I think it fits into what we're describing. The Shema is our commitment to Hashem in this world. Shema is where we accept Hashem as the king over the world. We accept Hashem runs the world. That's Shema. The way that the time that we're able to declare this is that we can see the blue versus the other colors. I mean, like we said, the blue represents the way that we kind of connect with Hashem through the world. It means how we perceive Hashem, discern Hashem in this world. And you know, when we have to recognize Hashem through Shema, that can only be done if we have the ability to distinguish between the blue and the other colors. So that's the idea of Mishayakir. So the typical way Hashem presents Himself in this world is going to be hidden behind the scenes, behind the white. You know, that's it. And if you know, Shema means that we as Jews are committed to finding Hashem and seeing that blue amongst the other colors. That's what Shema is for us. So symbolically, that time in the morning is called Mishayakir, when you distinguish. And it means that because the acceptance of Hashem as the king only really fulfills itself in our lives when we can distinguish and we can say, this is white and this is blue. You know, this links me up to Hashem, and this is an everyday event. So this is the way you answer Korach. And Korach comes and says, if you're all blue, then what do you need the strings for? The answer to Korach is You know, on a very high level, you're right. You know, we wish we could see Hashem everywhere. We wish everything was blue for us. But Korach, it's not true. That's not how life is in this world. We don't see Hashem everywhere. And the way the mitzvah is given to us is based on the reality in which we live. The reality we live in is that Hashem is, again, hiding behind the white strings. You know, you don't see, if Hashem was everywhere, then yeah, then everything would be blue. The blue shirt would be exactly the goal. But that's not how we live. We live that Hashem is, you can find him, but you have to look for him. And that's the way the tzitzis are made, that there's white and there's blue. I would just add in, you know, nowadays where we don't have access to the blue, it sort of symbolizes how much more difficult it is to find Hashem in a time of galus. You know, when you're in Eretz Yisrael in the ideal situation, with the Beis HaMikdash, so then Hashem, the blue is there in the white. In galus, it's even more difficult. So, you know, the history has had it that we don't even have the blue anymore. Because you have to search for Hashem even deeper to find him in the world that we're in. So that's Korach. But now we want to move to Purim a little bit. So Purim gives us a different look at things. There's a level of the way we usually live is that we say, you know, a lot of events occur, and periodically I spot Hashem in the events. But there's an ideal level where you say, I see that every event is Hashem. I see that every event which occurs, as plain and significant as it seems, that's really all Hashem. And you notice it everywhere. The story of Purim is a tremendous lesson that every single event which occurred, as mundane, as meaningless as it seemed, was all part of the miracle. The Vilna Gaon says that, you know, the Megillah occurred over a period of 9 years, as is described. Of those 9 years, we only select, you know, a certain amount to describe. A lot happens over 9 years. The Megillah is very selective in the verses as to which part of those 9 years describes. So the Vilna Gaon says, because the Megillah's job is to show you every step of the miracle. So the Megillah, so he says every verse in the Megillah somehow contributes to the miracle. You have to figure each one how it is. But every verse in the Megillah it links up to the miracle. So even though the Megillah is full of very mundane events, it's full of, you know, it's ancient kings, tyrants, you know, killing his wives, partying, drinking, political decisions, you know, others rising to power and others falling from power, and you know, it really just looks like, you know, any other history of any ancient country and any emperor or tyrant. But we recognize through the story of the Megillah that every single event there was actually Hashem performing a nes. So it wasn't like, okay, there's some events here which are just regular everyday events, and then a few miracles occur. It was that the regular everyday events were all miraculous, and Hashem was there in every single event. And you only notice that once you see the outcome of the miracle of the Megillah, then you can go back to the Megillah and see, oh wow, I understand why that's a miracle, and that's a miracle, and this every single verse was a miracle. So Purim is a time where you can rise above, let's say, the challenge of finding Hashem, the blue between the white, and recognize that no, really everything is blue. No, there's a certain level where we're able to notice that everything in life is Hashem. Everything, you know, it's something that we don't always feel and perceive. It's hard for us to see this, but there is a level in which we understand that every event which happens to us and in history is Hashem performing a miracle. In regular life, we don't notice that, and we just see miracles occasionally. We see Hashgacha occasionally. But from a much bigger perspective and from the real point of view, and historically, is that every event which occurs is Hashem guiding the show and bringing us to a certain goal, which is a miracle. And that's what Purim is all about. Purim shows us that everything's Hashem. You think Haman's rise to power was sort of a coincidence, and then we had to fight against him? No, that was Hashem putting him into place to create miracles, to create a yantif, to lead us to the building of the second Beis HaMikdash. We think that, you know, Haman's decrees were just an anti-Semite getting his way. No, that was Hashem encouraging us to do tshuva. That was Hashem encouraging us to unite and become one. You know, we know that the word melech in the Megillah, the idea of the king in the Megillah, is a reference also to Hashem. Because, you know, when a king makes a decree, it's Hashem speaking. When Achashverosh, who's just an earthly king, when he's making a decree, it's Hashem speaking from his mouth. Hashem is the one who's in control of the king. And when it comes to Purim, it shows us there is no difference between, you know, the white and the blue. It's really all blue. You know, the events you think are white. The events you think are just mundane, simple, everyday events are also Hashem. And everything is blue. So it's like, you know, in Korach's complaint, in a sense, is correct from the right perspective. That's not the world we live in on a regular basis. But from a much higher element, you know, when you look at it, Karach is right. You know, just we not the way we live daily life. So in daily life, that's not the halach, that's not true. But from a much bigger perspective, everything really is blue. Everything is Hashem, and Hashem is guiding it all. That's the big lesson of the Megillah. Megillas Esther, the Vilna Gaon says, the term can be understood as Megale Hester. You reveal the hidden. And really, the white is what hides Hashem. On Purim, we reveal that hidden. We say, no, the white is actually Hashem as well. It's all the blue. It's all Hashem. So that's the real lesson of the Megillah. It's a new way to see the world. When the Jews saw Mordechai wearing blue, so they saw him in lots of colors, right? They saw him in the golden crown. They saw him in the purple wool. They saw him in lots of things. But the piyut stresses Birosim Yachat Tchelus Mordechai. I think it's Tchelus because it's teaching us the lesson of Purim. The Jews are able to see the Tchelus and everything. They're able to see that everything really connects us up to Hashem. Everything is Hashem's control. Everything is Hashem's Hashkacha. That's what they noticed. The concept of Purim, this is a different discussion one day, but the concept of Purim really connects back to Adam and Chava before they sinned. And just one point to make about before they sinned is that they ate from what we call the Eitz Hadas Tovah, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. So they're recognizing that once you eat from the tree, now you know good versus evil. Which means what? You look at events in the world and say, that's an evil event, that's a good event. Mm-hmm. So that's saying, oh, there's white things, and there's things that Hashem's not involved in, and there's things Hashem is involved in. And that's how we perceive life very often. But before that, before they ate from the tree, it says there is no knowledge of good and evil. They're able to see that it's all Hashem's hand, it's all good. And Purim is trying to teach us that lesson, that really that you don't have to make any distinctions between good and evil, because really it's all Hashem running the world. I mean, in your actions you do, but not in terms of seeing historical events. It's all Hashem running the world. I have one more point about this. No, I don't like to discuss the practical elements of drinking on Purim. That's everyone has to use their own, to take it on their own and use their own seichel and be responsible with drinking in general. But the way that the Gemara phrases the idea of drinking on Purim is always fascinating to me. Because it says one should drink on Purim until you no longer know the difference between Haman and Mordechai. That's the Gemara's words. You should drink until you no longer know the difference between Haman and Mordechai. Practically what to do, ask your rabbi, but that's how the Gemara words the concept. So it's telling you, when you don't know the difference between Haman and Mordechai, it's telling you that it's all the same. It's, you know, you could say that the Haman and the Mordechai, it's all Hashem running the show. And it's not like there's not have to find Hashem through everything, it's all Hashem running the show. That's essentially what the Western of Purim is. We mentioned before that the covering over the Aron was blue. Right? So when they traveled, everything else had other coverings to showing, but the Aron was showing blue. So I would suggest as well, of all the different vessels that they had in the Mishkan, and all the different things we have in this world, the holiest, the highest element of anything is the Aron. The Aron is something which contains in it the Luchos, the tablets that Moshe got at Har Sinai. That's our most direct link to Hashem. So that's covered in total blue, because when you see the Aron, you're seeing a direct link to Hashem. So it's covered in that blue. And that's covered in total blue. So this is really, you know, our job on Purim, if we want to take the lesson of the Megillah, our job is to be able to look at life and understand that on one level, the way we live, that we have to find Hashem, you know, we have to search through the white and make the connections and connect the dots and find the blue. But on a much higher level, we have to realize that we have to at least have faith that Hashem runs everything in this world, and there is a perspective where everything becomes totally blue. This is the joy we're going to have. You know, at the end of days, you know, we're talking about the tremendous simcha. Mashiach comes, and the world reaches perfection. One of the great causes of happiness is that we're able to look back in history and understand how it all worked. I mean, right now, we don't really see where the world's headed. We can't really tell, like, well, how's it going to work? Mashiach's going to come, and there'll be Bais HaMikdash. Everyone's going to be, like, united and happy and serving Hashem. And, you know, the Arabs are going to stop hating us. And, you know, everyone in America is going to recognize Jews as the greatest people. Like, how's that ever going to work? We don't really understand it. Mashiach comes, we're going to look back and say, oh, I see how it all led up to this. And we're going to figure it all out. And we're going to see all those things we thought were totally irrelevant to Hashem's goals were actually part of Hashem's goals. That's how history works. Yeah, that's the great simcha that they reach in the future. So this is really the lessons, the lesson we take on Purim. I would even add in one more point. The word Purim means lotteries, lots. And if you want to select something, there's two ways to do it. You can make a decision, make a distinction, this is right, this is wrong, or you can just choose out of a hat. Right? So making a distinction between right and wrong is saying, you know, there's something here which is bad, something here which is good, and therefore I'm going to choose the good. A lottery says, I'm just going to choose something, and they're all the same to me. So it very much reminds me again of the white and the blue. When usually you look at, okay, there's white and there's blue, I want to try to find the blue. But when you're looking from the perspective that it's all Hashem, then it doesn't matter which one I choose, because it's all Hashem. So Purim, the name of Purim suggests the idea that we look at each thing the same. This is all Hashem running the show. I don't have to find him between the white and the blue. It's all the same thing. So Mordechai comes out in his royal garments, and everybody is very, very excited. Because they see that Mordechai is wearing not just the crown, not just the purple, not just the red. He's wearing techeles. And wearing techeles means that all the Jews in Shushan were able to perceive. We see how Hashem ran every single event. I always like to put myself, you know, if you were to put yourself into their shoes, you know, really the most of the Purim story happened over 3 days. You know, we don't realize that. Most of the story of Purim happened over 3 days. You know, Haman decided to kill the Jews, goes to Achashverosh, Esther finds out, they fast, on the third day of the fast, Haman's killed. That's, you know, that's most of the story. So imagine you were there on day one, and you heard, you know, the king has just issued a decree of genocide to kill every single Jew in his empire, which basically was every Jew in the world. He was the world emperor. So at that point, you're going to say, Hashem, what's going on here? Hashem, you promised us to be an eternal people. You know, you told us we'd be back in Eretz Yisrael after 70 years in Golos, and we're still here. And, you know, you think it's all gone. You know, everything is lost. 3 days later, you see Haman hanging on the gallows. You see Mordechai coming out dressed in royal garments. And you're saying, hey, okay, now I get it. You know, and you see all the Jews united as one. And you get it all. It makes sense to you now. When you're in the midst of the problem, things don't make sense. And to find Hashem there is very difficult. You know, basically they said, we know, even Esther says, Keli ki lama zavtani, Hashem, why did you forsake me? Why did you leave me? That's a pasuk in Tehillim, which the rabbis attribute to Esther. But then after the fact, you say, Hashem never abandoned us. Hashem was there the whole time. I mean, all these things that were done were for our sake, because we're in a much better position now 3 days later than we were 3 days ago. 3 days ago, we were splintered. We were in despair. We were fighting with each other. People were not as devoted to Torah as they should have been. That was 3 days before. 3 days later, it's a new people. Everyone's done tshuva. Everyone's united. Everybody's reaccepted the Torah and the mitzvos. I mean, it's a new world. 3 days, a matter of 3 days. And from that perspective, they understand that all those events were really just for their sake. And it was all a gift from Hashem. Haman was a gift from Hashem. And Haman's decree is a gift from Hashem. So that's how we have to view it. So that means that Haman wasn't white. Haman was actually the blue. He's also the blue. That's how you have to see it all. It's a perspective we have to find in life. It's not easy to look at things this way, but in life, sometimes you're able to look back and say, hey, that thing that happened to me, which I thought was really tragic, you know, really it helped me grow. It was good for me. And then you look back and say, that was really Hashem giving me a gift, even though it was hard at the time, and it was difficult, and it was stressful, and it was scary. But I came out as a better person because of it. That was all Hashem leading me to a certain place. So this is a deep idea, but it's a big lesson of Purim. It's a way we're supposed to learn how to view the world. And everyone should have a happy Purim. Yeah, be able to accomplish this.
Rabbi Chin of the Robinson said they're going to have an open house. No liquor.
Yeah, right. Yeah.